Start the new year in the right headspace with some great conversations. We've curated episodes on motivation, health, addiction, relationships, confidence, and mindset just for you.
Saying to myself, you've had a pretty good life, so not a bad way to die surfing. And then I thought, no, not today. You know, it's my family that brought it back.
Search Conversations Podcast with Richard Feidler and Sarah Kanoski on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this episode contains the name of an Aboriginal person who has died. The three gunshots fired by Zachary Rolfe in Yuendumu echoed around Australia. They challenged our legal system and tested our trust in politicians and the police. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to Chapter 1 of the case of Kumanjai Walker.
Constable Zachary Rolfe fatally shot the 19-year-old.
Sometimes I think about how he must have felt in his last moments. Was he scared?
And I can promise you, consequences will flow.
Constable Rolfe has pleaded not guilty to one charge of murder.
Prosecutors took the case to the High Court.
There's been a huge outpouring of grief.
An organisation with significant hallmarks of institutional racism.
When we are going to get justice? When?
What happens in remote communities rarely makes it to the capital cities of this country. But when Kumanjai Walker is shot and killed by Constable Zachary Rolfe, everybody hears about it and everyone has thoughts. Melissa McKay is an ABC News Channel presenter and at the time of the shooting was the ABC's court reporter in Darwin, someone who is uniquely placed to help us tell this story. Melissa, thank you for joining us for this series. Can you take me to the night that this happened?
The 9th of November 2019 is a Saturday night. There's a funeral in town. There's a lot of people gathered. It's just after sunset when two policemen end up face to face with a young Aboriginal man inside a little red house in Yuendumu. They hold a picture up to his face. There's a scuffle. Scissors are drawn. A police officer is injured. And 3 seconds later, that officer has fired his gun 3 times. And those shots reverberate around the country.
They're felt in almost every city and town in Australia, and they lead to a murder trial, a coronial inquest, and has been a saga for years and years, something that not just the people involved, but the families of the people involved, the communities of the people involved have had to deal with. And Mel, it's a story that you have followed and reported on that entire time.
This is a story that I have been able to tell from courtrooms and from Yuendumu over so many years. And so many members of the community and lawyers involved have been, you know, so open with me to be able to help to tell this story. You know, I think there are a lot of limitations to me as a Kadia woman, a white woman coming into a place like Yuendumu trying to write these stories. And so we're also going to hear throughout this series from voices within the community who are able to explain things perhaps better than I could.
Yeah, I'm a white person as well, Mel, and there are other voices that are better placed to tell parts of this story than both you and I. And so, as you mentioned, we'll be hearing from some of them as we move through this series of Kumanjai Walker and Zachary Rolfe and that confrontation in Yuendumu in late 2019. I mean, Mel, to give us a sense of place, can you tell us a bit about Yuendumu? I mean, this is a town that is tiny and, you know, quite literally hundreds of kilometres from anywhere.
Yuendumu is a really small community of about 800 to 1,000 people. It's 300 kilometres from Alice Springs, which in and of itself is a small town. So you can only imagine how remote Yuendumu is by comparison. It's 3 or 4 hours drive from Alice, and it kind of fits that stereotypical picture of the outback, you know, the red dirt and the dust around the community. It's a really welcoming little town, and it's just so different from what a lot of people in major cities will probably ever see or experience.
Mm, yeah, but despite that, it becomes this focal point for so many conversations around the country. Mel, in this story, there are two people at the middle of it. One of them is Zachary Rolfe, an NT policeman at the time of this shooting, and the other is Kumanjai Walker. He is from Yuendumu. Can you tell us a bit about who he is?
Kumanjai Walker was a 19-year-old Walpula Richa man, and we've heard a lot about him in various court cases over the last few years, but I think it's probably best to hear from those who knew Kumanjai about what he was like. This is his cousin, Samara Fernandez-Brown, talking about what she remembers of growing up with her cousin.
I remember Kumanjai always having a presence. You know, like you'll hear many, many people say that. He wasn't a man of many words, unless you're like, you know, our boy cousins, then he would talk a lot and have fun with them. But I just remember him always having a presence. Even if he was super quiet, he was there. But when we were younger, you know, he was funny, he was cheeky, and he took jokes really well. And I just always remember like him and Anil Ann being super close as well and having a really strong connection. And for a long time, I didn't know that he was even adopted by Anil Ann. For me, that was always her son. So I just remember that he was a very loved boy. And, you know, family talk about how much he loved animals. I think just the fact that I really enjoyed his presence when I was around him as a young person.
That's Samara Fernandez-Brown, the cousin of Kumanjai Walker. And Mel, as well as what we've heard from Samara, you know, there were also challenges in Kumanjai Walker's life.
Yeah, Kumanjai struggled a lot as a young person. We heard through various court hearings he was quite ill as a young baby. He moved around a lot. He was likely born with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. He had hearing problems and likely a cognitive disability as well. And he was raised by his adoptive mother, Leanne Oldfield Brown, who he had a really close connection with. But sometimes there were struggles with keeping Kumanjai engaged with school, and he ran into a lot of trouble with the justice system, particularly as a teenager.
And then we have Zachary Rolfe from the Northern Territory Police Force. Who is Zachary Rolfe?
In November of 2019, Zachary Rolfe was a 28-year-old young constable on the Northern Territory Police Force. He'd been based in Alice Springs for just under 3 years. He grew up in Canberra. His parents are well-known philanthropists around the city. He had quite a privileged upbringing. He went to private school and played rugby and rowing. And when he graduated from high school, he joined the army and wanted to eventually join the Special Forces before he eventually landed in the Northern Territory Police Force, where he was based in Alice Springs, and he was known as sort of the go-to guy on the beat in Alice Springs. You know, the two people at the centre of this story, Kumanjai Walker and Zachary Rolfe, could not have had more of a different life.
Yeah, thank you, Mel. And, I mean, can you take us back to November in Yuendumu, 2019? What is happening in this town at this point?
It's really quiet in Yuendumu that night because there's a funeral in town for an elder, one of Kumanjai Walker's grandfathers. The community is in mourning, and there's a lot of people who have come to town for that funeral. That's why Kumanjai Walker is there in the first place. He has, at this point, left a rehab facility in Alice Springs. He's cut off his ankle monitoring bracelet to come to Yuendumu to participate in Sorry Business. You know, culturally, he's required to be in Yuendumu at this point, but legally, he shouldn't be there. So there's this tension in Yuendumu about Kumanjai being there in the first place with the police. There's also been, in the lead up to the 9th of November, a string of break-ins around town that have targeted the nurses and the nurses' quarters. And so at this point as well, the nurses have evacuated on this Saturday morning before this funeral is to take place. The nurses in Yuendumu have left and gone to Alice Springs for the weekend because they have been feeling unsafe in the community because of a string of break-ins. So it's quite a tense and really emotional time in Yuendumu to begin with.
Mm. And is Zachary Rolfe brought in just to arrest Kumanjai Walker? Is that the reason that he ends up in town?
Not exactly. Because, as I said, there's been this string of break-ins, police are also pretty exhausted. And, you know, policing in a remote community, it's only really a small team. And so police have been feeling pretty overworked in the lead up to the 9th of November. So their local sergeant, the officer in charge, Julie Frost, has called for backup. She has asked for this additional team of police officers to come in from Alice Springs to help provide some respite for her team, but also to assist in the arrest of Kumanjai Walker, because police have already tried to arrest Kumanjai a couple of days earlier, but there's been what's now known as the axe incident on that attempt.
Can you tell me a bit about that? Because that sounds like a kind of, you know, reasonably serious interaction, anything involving kind of police and an axe.
Yeah, absolutely. This took place a couple of days before the funeral because, as we've said, Kumanjai Walker was breaching a court order by being in Yuendumu. Police were looking for him to arrest him, to take him back. And at one point, police officers attempt to arrest Kumanjai and he threatens them with an axe. No one's injured. Police run off. Kumanjai runs off. And then after this, there's sort of some discussion between local police and Kumanjai Walker's family around the reason why he's in Yuendumu being for that funeral. And so there's sort of this agreement made that Kumanjai will be left alone. He'll be allowed to attend the funeral and then he's to turn himself into police. And if he doesn't, then police will come and arrest him after this funeral. And that's sort of where Zachary Rolfe and his team who come in from Alice Springs come into the picture.
Right. Okay. So, you know, there's this agreement. It sounds like a kind of cultural understanding from the police in Yuendumu around, you know, why Kumanjai Walker is in town and working with the family to do that. And then, yeah, there's this kind of other team from Alice Springs that is coming out, which involves Zachary Rolfe. And you've just explained this kind of plan for Kumanjai Walker to turn himself in. Is that something that they're not across or not engaged in? What's happening there?
So there turns out to be a bit of confusion around the plan for the immediate response team, this team that's come in from Alice Springs. This is a team of general duties police officers who are called up as part of this kind of part-time pseudo-tactical team, the immediate response team. Mm. So it involves Zachary Rolfe, a couple of other police officers, and there's also a dog handler that's called in from Alice Springs as well. So the plan that Julie Frost has laid out is that the IRT and this dog handler are to provide extra police support that night on the 9th of November. This is the night of the funeral, and that they will then go the following morning with a local police officer who's arrested Kumanjai Walker before, who'll be able to identify him, to arrest him safely at 5 a.m. the next day following the funeral.
Why 5 a.m.?
Well, as I said, Julie Frost has made this plan or this deal with Kumanjai's family that he can attend the funeral and then hand himself in. And the idea of this 5 a.m. arrest was around that he would essentially be half asleep and that it could be a safer time to effect an arrest of someone who has previously threatened police.
Mm, yeah, the axe incident that you were referring to before. So there is a plan in place. It doesn't sound like that is what ends up being followed, though, because this all happens the night before.
Yeah, exactly. And so we later hear that Zachary Rolfe and his team have arrived in Alice Springs the evening of the 9th of November. They're under the impression, they say, that their job is to arrest Kumanjai Walker and take him back to Alice Springs. They say that they didn't know where Kumanjai Walker was going to be the next morning to be able to effect this safe arrest at 5 a.m. and that they say that Julie Frost had said to them as she left the station that night that if they're to come across Kumanjai Walker, then by all means, arrest him. And so they go out and they start looking for Kumanjai Walker.
And, I mean, do they know who Kumanjai Walker even is?
Well, they haven't met him before, but they've got a picture of what he looks like to try and track him down. What the IRT know about Kumanjai Walker is the axe incident from a few days earlier. We know that Zachary Rolfe and some of his colleagues, when they were back in Alice Springs, had watched the footage, the body-worn footage of this axe incident. That was doing the rounds, you know, at the Alice Springs police station, because police were shocked that something as serious as police officers being threatened with an axe hadn't been flagged across the force as a serious incident.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, you know, you're talking to us about how these guys are in Yuendumu. They're basically out looking for Kumanjai Walker at this point after they've arrived in town. I mean, is that something that takes long in a town like Yuendumu?
Not at all. You know, Yuendumu, as we've said, is tiny. And once you start walking around town telling people that you're a police officer and you're looking for Kumanjai Walker, that's going to get back to him pretty quickly, or it's going to get around town fairly quickly. So we see Zachary Rolfe and his team going out doing what they have called intel gathering, looking to try and find where Kumanjai Walker will be even for this 5 a.m. arrest, right? So they're searching for him. They go to a few houses where he's known to be, and then they come across him in his grandmother's house, in house 511.
And what happens when they get to this house and knock on the door?
This happens really, really quickly. Zachary Rolfe and his partner Adamy Burl enter the house and they see this young man who gives them a false name. He says that his name is Vernon Dixon. And Zachary Rolfe has this photo of Kumanjai Walker on his phone that he holds up to his face. So he's getting really, really close to him to be able to identify this young man in front of him as the young man in the picture that he's got on his phone. And within seconds, Kumanjai Walker has pulled a pair of scissors from his pocket, stabbed Constable Rolfe in the shoulder, and Zachary Rolfe has fired his weapon three times within a matter of seconds.
And the timing of these gunshots, Mel, is really important. So can you break this moment down for us a little bit more?
Absolutely. So Zachary Rolfe fires one shot. There's 2.6 seconds, and then he fires a second and a third in quick succession.
And does Kumanjai Walker die in that house?
Not in the house, no. Police handcuff Kumanjai Walker. They take the scissors from his hand and then they drag him to the back of a police car and take him to the police station. Remember, the nurses had evacuated Yuendumu earlier that day, so there was no one in the health centre to treat Kumanjai after he's been shot. He's taken straight to the watch house where he dies on the floor of a police cell just a couple of hours later.
Oh. Does Kumanjai Walker's family have any idea what has happened to him at this point?
Well, it's really unclear at that point, right? Because some members of the community were there in and around House 511. They heard the gunshots. They saw what happened. They saw police going in looking for him. Other members of the community are still at the cemetery burying Kumanjai's grandfather. So there's a lot of confusion around what's actually taken place. And then Kumanjai is taken to the police station where the police lock themselves inside and the family are gathering outside the police station. There's a lot of tension. People are scared. They don't know what's going on. Some community members have thrown rocks over the police station trying to get their attention. Other members of the community are trying to keep their family calm, trying to, you know, quell the tensions that are growing at this point. Members of the community are also posting on social media from outside of the police station that night. They're live streaming and filming because they're scared that no one's going to pay attention to what's happened to them. And, you know, they're filming how they are being left figuratively and literally in the dark about what's happened to Kumanjai Walker. All they know is that a young man has been shot by a police officer and he's been taken to the police station, and they don't know what's going on behind those locked doors.
Mel, you've talked about how there's no nurses in Yuendumu at this point. I mean, is there any help or assistance that arrives?
Some nurses from a nearby community about 40 minutes away were called in to assist. Police do their best to provide the first aid that they can with the limited resources, but for a gunshot wound to be treated by first aid in a remote community was always going to be so difficult. And by the time the nurses arrive from Yuendumu, Kumanjai Walker has already passed away.
For the family outside the police station, Mel, I mean, do they see anything that suggests that there's help or there is hope for Kumanjai Walker?
Yeah, the community sees the ambulances arrive. They also later on during the night see a plane landing at the airstrip, and they see ambulances rushing out to the airstrip with police cars as well. So there's a lot of moving parts on the night, but there's not a lot of information coming to the community who are still gathered outside of the police station waiting to be told what's going on.
And how long is it, Mel, before they find out what happened?
It's not until the next morning when police finally call in one of Kumanjai's relatives to tell them that he's passed away. It's also not until the next morning that they realise that Kumanjai's body has been left in the police station overnight, that when they saw that plane come in and they thought he was being taken to the hospital, that he was actually still lying on the floor of a police cell.
And Mel, you were working for ABC Darwin at the time that this happened. How and when did you find out? When did this start to kind of hit the news?
It became pretty clear very quickly that something significant had taken place in Yuendumu. One of my colleagues in Alice Springs, Stephen Schubert, was getting phone calls from people that he knew in the community about what was happening on the night. But it was really, really unclear for several hours what had actually taken place. We didn't know clearly until the next day, really, that a young man had died as a result of a police officer shooting them. And so there was a lot of rumour and conjecture around what had taken place in Yuendumu that night.
Once people started to learn what had happened in Yuendumu, Mel, how quick was the reaction?
It was immediate. Even with very limited information, it became very clear very quickly that there were going to be two sides to what had happened in Yuendumu that night.
Yeah, and I mean, Mel, that's the kind of public reaction to the shooting. What was the political reaction?
Well, the police commissioner, who was only very fresh in the job, Jamie Chalker, flew to Yuendumu a couple of days later with the then Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, to address the community about what had happened and to try to explain to them where the police investigation was at. And it's here that the political aspect of this case sort of starts to get really big. Michael Gunner says to the community that there will be a police investigation and then there'll be a coronial investigation, and that consequences will flow as a result of those investigations.
Yeah, and I mean, Zachary Rolfe is charged with murder over the shooting of Kumanjai Walker in Yuendumu on that night. And, you know, the words that are said, consequences will flow. I mean, in our next episode where we look at the trial of Zachary Rolfe, when we look at the evidence that is presented against him and the arguments that are made by the prosecution and defense teams, you know, in that we'll start to learn as well about the significance of that, you know, not even sentence, consequences will flow, because that really is quite a big moment in this whole process and story of Kumanjai Walker and Zachary Rolfe. Mel, thank you so much for taking us through this whole story and you know, telling us about what happened in Yuendamu that night.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Mel on Thursday this week in our second episode where we look at the trial of Zachary Rolfe. And while we're spending six episodes looking at this story, we're really only scratching the surface. There is so much more you can listen, watch, and read if you're interested in finding out a little bit more. There's some great resources out there. For example, Stephen Schubert's book, Death in Yuendamu, which helped us in preparing for this series. So, yeah, I'd encourage you to have a look around and explore the other things that are available around this story, because there really is a lot to it and we can't do it justice, really, in this series. If you do have any questions as well, please get in touch, thecaseof@abc.net.au. We have Mel and a special guest planned for an episode at the end of this series where we answer all of your questions. So if there's something you're not sure about, if you want clarified, send us an email, thecaseof@abc.net.au, and we'll get to that at the end of this series. The Case of Kumanjai Walker is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. It's reported by Melissa McKay and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller, and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. Thank you to senior lawyer Jasmine Sims and to senior cultural advisor Miriam Korowa for their help making this series. This episode was produced on the land of the Gadigal, Turrbal, and Wurundjeri people.